It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I hope you enjoy this morning's show. I'm going to take you south of the border to the Sea of Cortez, where I had the pleasure of spending a few days this past week with National Geographic on a National Geographic expedition to look at whales, sea life, and some of the birds and environmental issues taking place in the Sea of Cortez. And I, not having been on the sea in a boat the way we were, it was quite an experience. I've certainly been down to the south tip of Baja and fished in the Sea of Cortez, particularly around on the Pacific side, but never on what I would call an ecological tour to really understand what's taking place in the Sea of Cortez. And National Geographic, I must say, does a really, really good job of explaining what's taking place and leading a discussion. And it was a it was really quite an experience from the point of view that we were very fortunate to see an enormous amount of marine life, which you could spend a lot of time in the Sea of Cortez and not see. I think the highlight of our trip was, from the point of view of marine life, was we were following a very large pod of bottlenose dolphins. And when I say a large pod, I think there were 200 to 300 dolphins that were moving before us in a relatively choppy sea. And all of a sudden, about 40 yards away, this killer whale came out of the water, spout, spewing, and completely its body out of the water. And that, first of all, killer whales are very rarely seen in the Sea of Cortez. And that began a chase which lasted for a good half an hour of a pod of killer whales. I think there were 6 or 7 in total chasing this group of bottlenose dolphins, and it was a sight that it's almost impossible to describe. If you sometimes see a great nature film, you might see a situation where you watch animals pursue and kill other animals, but very seldom do you see it in marine life. And in this case, we were right there watching and then following at full speed the killer whales chasing this group of dolphins, and they would cut into them and try to cut off the young or cut off the less swift. And they ended up scattering the group of dolphins, which, as I said, was at least 200 to 300 dolphins, in all different directions. And a little bit like a lion breaks off an impala off a herd, that's a little bit what the killer whales did. They kept going at them until they broke off a couple of dolphins, and that was that. And then the next thing you saw was blood in the water. But it was incredible to watch this high speed. And when I'm saying high speed, the whales were going, I would say, every bit of 15, 18 miles an hour. And the dolphins were actually faster than the whales, but the whales were able to cut them off as they were moving, or it appeared, let's put it this way, the dolphins were faster. Of course, they're tiny in size compared to a killer whale, but to be within really 50 yards or so of these mammoth whales which slashing through the water and watching the dolphins try to evade them was just, I'll never see it again in my life. And actually, the people from National Geographic said that in the 22 years that they've been, one of them had been doing this trip, it's the first time that they had ever seen it. So that was part of the nature experience, which was phenomenal. But just the Sea of Cortez itself and the marine life is remarkable. The color of the water, and I was surprised at how cold the water was. And one of the reasons I know how cold the water was is that we went swimming with sea lions, which in and of itself was a lifetime experience. And we donned snorkel gear and jumped into the water. We did have wetsuits on, and even at that, the water was cold. And the further north you go in the Sea of Cortez, the colder the water. So we ended up at this island with this rocky point where there were just hundreds of sea lions. And we fell off the zodiac, if you will, rolled backwards into the water, and found ourselves swimming with the sea lions for about 45 minutes before all of us were just numb from the coldness of the water. But the sea lions come right up to you, and these are animals that weigh, the males can weigh upwards of 800 pounds, 1,000 pounds, and they swim underneath you, and they're not aggressive. They're not coming after you. And then the little pups are inquisitive as so many, if you will, the young of animals, including humans, are inquisitive. They would come right up to you and then swim by. And it was just remarkable to be in the water with that kind of sea life, to see the sea lions in their natural habitat. So those were probably the two most spectacular highlights from a wildlife interaction that took place when I was in the Sea of Cortez, which is just a remarkable marine and bird life. We saw nesting colonies where the islands were just completely white from the guano of the birds. Reminds me of some of the cormorant colonies, which are now occupying the upper Midwest and up into Lake of the Woods in southern Canada, where they're, in the case of the cormorants, they're destroying everything. In the case of these colonies, they're rock piles that have been there for thousands of years. There's not a stick on them. And this is where the birds live, breed, and go out to feed and come back. So the saddest thing that we saw, and I want to spend a moment now talking about the environmental elements of the Sea of Cortez. And this really, it's kind of changed my views on things. The tragedy of seeing sea lions wrapped up in fishing nets and birds killed by being wrapped up in plastic really was something that struck me. And I'll try to describe this in a way that has you understand why it has changed my view. And I used to think when I heard about the plastic bag bans in states or the taxes imposed on plastic bags, that was something that was not maybe to be lauded. After spending a week in the Sea of Cortez and seeing the damage that plastic does, I have to tell you that my views changed. You are in this incredibly pristine environment, and here you watch sea life being strangled from being caught up in plastic. And a lot of these are just the plastic that's in everyday lives, plastic bags. The sea lions ingest plastic bags when they're going out to feed, and it gets in their stomach and it kills them. Birds, we saw birds wrapped in plastic and unable to fly. So there is a serious problem in the world with plastic, and we know that. And in the Sea of Cortez, it struck me firsthand. The other thing that really, really kind of hurt to watch was to see, and there's illegal netting going on in the Sea of Cortez for fish, but there's also legal netting going on in the Sea of Cortez. But to see sea lions wrapped in essentially the long line and gill nets to where they've swum into these nets and they become entangled, and then their sheer power, they've been able to go through the nets, but the nets are wrapped around their bodies and cutting them. And as the sea lion grows, it chokes them. And we saw numerous instances of where fishing nets were commercial fishing nets, not recreational, commercial fishing nets. The sea lions had gotten into the nets and it was strangling them, and their bodies were encased in these nets. And it was really a grotesque thing to see. And you're in a place that's so incredibly beautiful and so pristine, and it's one of the world's great marine places. I mean, the Sea of Cortez is just world renowned for its fisheries resources. But to see these animals and birds being caught up in nets and plastic was just shocking. And I realized the other day when I came back, I heard about the governor of New York, Cuomo, wanting to ban the sale of plastic bags in the entire state of New York. And then maybe 2 weeks ago, I would have said, that's just not a great idea. I think it's a great idea. And maybe we ought to realize the impact that plastic is having on our world. And after the break, I'm going to take in just a moment, I'm going to go to two places very, very different, which now sort of come together for me about really the garbage problem we have. And I spoke about this just 2 weeks ago, but it really with the oceans, with the garbage in the oceans. But this really is something that is a ticking time bomb, if you will, for the environment. And as those of you who have listened to me for a long time, you know that I'm not an environmentalist in the context of a lot of environmentalists. I'm a conservationist, and I believe in the wise use of our natural resources. But I also think that in the case of plastics, we are having a really profound and oftentimes unrealized, unseen impact on our natural resources. And in the Sierra Cortez last week, it was very much firsthand in your face. These are the consequences of what's taking place, and it really was kind of horrific. But overall, the Sierra Cortez is one of the most magnificent places I've ever visited, a spectacularly beautiful marine life, bird life, the water. It really is one of the wonders of the world. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN Radio. But first, a message from our longtime sponsors, Chevrolet, Northwest Indiana, and Chicagoland Chevrolet Dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And just before I switch to a couple of other issues, I do want to talk about garbage. And it's, I mentioned in the Sierra Cortez, an area that's so pristine, you still see the impacts of garbage. And it makes me realize that there are three places that I've been in the last couple of years where it really has kind of struck me that what's going on in the world regarding garbage. One was Nicaragua, where there's just plastic bags littering everywhere, and garbage in the ravines, and garbage in the streets, and the only means of garbage disposal is rain, and it washes it down the gullies and ultimately ends up in the Pacific Ocean. In Mexico last week, in our drive through southern Baja up to get on the National Geographic ship in La Paz, you couldn't help but be struck by just the garbage everywhere. And it makes you wonder why, particularly in Central America, why we can't pick up garbage, why it is just left everywhere to be blown around and end up in the ocean, because that's where it all ends up. And you go off the main streets, even in areas like Cabo San Lucas, and you walk three blocks off the main street, and you just see garbage in the ditches, and you realize in the ravines, and you realize that the next rainstorm, it comes, it goes down the wash and ends up in the ocean. And then the other place I mentioned a few weeks ago was, I was walking down a sand spit in the Bering Sea 2 years ago, an area where no one's walked in a long time, and there was garbage all over the beach, of course, being washed up by the sea currents coming from Asia. A lot of it is a result of the tsunami, but it does make you recognize that we in America, we work hard on picking up our garbage, but we still aren't very good at it. Just drive down any road this time of the year in the Chicago area, or even in rural areas, before the grass greens up and the trees leaf up, and look in the roadside ditches, you'll just be appalled at the amount of garbage that's in our roadside ditches. So we are, in a way, the example of the world, because we really pick up our garbage. On the other hand, it's a worldwide problem. Garbage is almost everywhere you look, and even in some of the most beautiful places in the world, it's everywhere you look, and that's something that is not something that I guess we should be very proud of, and not quite sure what we're going to do about it, except we have a problem worldwide with the contamination of our oceans and waters and rivers as a result of garbage. And I saw that again firsthand last week in Mexico. It's really sickening to think that we cannot take better care of our landscape as a society. I don't mean as American society, but I mean as a society at large. So that was really the only downer of the trip, was just seeing the terrible garbage that exists, in this case, in Mexico, in the Baja Peninsula. Moving, though, to a much happier subject. I cannot end the show on a subject, on a thought like that. And that is what's going on in the St. Lawrence Seaway with striped bass. And I guess it's happy if you are a striped bass fisherman, and it's unhappy if you are a Atlantic salmon fisherman. But what's happened is striped bass are returning to the St. Lawrence Seaway in incredible numbers for the first time in many, many years, over 2.5 decades since they saw these kinds of numbers. And it's a boon to fishing in one hand and a bane to fishing on the other, as it does appear that striped bass getting into salmon rivers has an impact on Atlantic salmon, which are the prized game fish of that entire region, northeastern Canada, up through, of course, they were once very prominent in Maine and in the United States as well, sea-run Atlantic salmon, but they're not anymore. But certainly in Canada, salmon have for years been the game species. And here comes striped bass, and there's a big question as to whether striped bass are moving there because of forage fish, are moving there because of changes in the water temperatures. But either way, there is a absolute boom going on for striped bass throughout northern New England and into the Canadian provinces, Nova Scotia, Quebec, Labrador, and it's something that hasn't been seen, actually it's never been seen before in these kinds of numbers, and it'll be interesting to see over the next coming years if it continues or if this is just an aberration. But for right now, it's leaving sea scientists a bit perplexed as to what's going on to enable the striped bass populations to explode the way they have in populations. Next week, I'm going to do a bit of a report on national parks as we head into the time of the year when we visit our national parks, and talk a little bit about the fee increase that was proposed and then withdrawn, and why maybe that's not a good thing. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about what's taking place with the economics of hunting and fishing, and some of the reports coming out from the Commerce Department, which are really quite telling as to the direction of recreation in America. I thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.